go ahead and get started. First off, I want to thank all of you for purchasing our book. We certainly enjoyed writing it, and we've enjoyed recently giving checks to the American Diabetic Association and to the Oregon Health Science Center Dental School, and they have been very grateful for all of your contributions. I want to thank Tom DeLopez for being on the call this morning. Dr. DeLopez is a client of ours. He has been on our Blatchford coaching program for about a year and a half. He is one of the chapters in the book. He has literally doubled his practice in the last 18 months. Tom came to us. Tom is, if you've read the book, you'll read about Tom. He's very successful, played college football in Florida for a couple of years, determined that he probably wasn't going to be NFL material, decided to find a better day job with a little less risk, went to dental school. Tom and his wife have traveled extensively throughout the world. He has accumulated enough liquid assets that he could retire anytime he wanted to. As a matter of fact, he came to us in that situation. It wasn't about money for Tom. He is more interested in the challenge of what he could do in dentistry. Tom is a lecturer, has lectured at several meetings, including the Chicago Midwinter meeting on clinical dentistry, has written several articles, has been on the cover of Dentistry Today a couple times. So he's a very accomplished clinician, and over the last 12 months, literally doubled his practice. Went from about, I think he was doing about 750 to 800,000 when we started. He and his wife came out to Sun River. We spent a day with him here starting the coaching program, set some new goals, went back to his team in Tallahassee, and the team set some new goals. Tom, you want to tell us just a little bit about how you got started with us, what transpired, and especially about going back and having your staff set higher goals.
Well, that was really interesting. As Bill said, my main objective was to be able to do more of a type of dentistry that I love and that I feel I'm highly qualified to do, and I just wasn't getting enough of those type of cases. So, also I wanted to take more time off, and that was another factor. That's part of the Blatchford coaching program. So after a meeting with Bill and reading a lot of books on the bibliography, Bill and Carolyn out in Sun River, I was very enthusiastic, but as I'm sure a lot of you have come across, you come back from a meeting and you're enthusiastic and your staff is not particularly on board. But this is a really great thing about being in the Blatchford coaching program. I really count starting my program when we went to the Dynamo in Chicago, and I took my staff to Chicago, and it was really quite a surprise. As Bill had said, my objective was to get a little more time off and to do better sales presentations, and that is a major part of the Blatchford coaching too, and it really changed how my presentations are made and how I feel about presenting dentistry to people. But to get back to the point on hand, my staff went to Chicago with me, and we were at the Dynamo, and you know, Bill is telling you things that you've already heard. But
matter of fact, there wasn't a lot probably that you heard this year that you haven't heard someplace.
That's true. Your sales presentation technique is unique. I've never heard that anywhere else. But the staff came to Chicago and they totally believed Bill, and so they got on board. And part of the Dynamo is you have a little breakout group with your staff and you set goals. And my staff, we were doing about $750,000 a year, and my staff's not me. My staff set the goal to do $1.4 million. And to cut to the chase, that was November 11th in 2004. In 2005, we did $1.2 million. So, and we're on goal to do a little more than $1.4 this year. That was my staff's goal. And so they set that goal, and also we made some other changes like taking more time off. I was taking 4 weeks a year off, and my staff would take 2 to 3 weeks, depending on how long they'd been with me. So we made the agreement at that meeting. I had been working 5 mornings a week and taking 3 afternoons off, so essentially 4 days, but every morning we'd work. So my staff had been asking me for years if we could take Fridays off and work on Wednesday afternoon. And I was a bit reluctant to do that because Friday morning had always been my most productive day. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll try it. And if we don't make less money, then we'll stick with the 4 days in a row and all that, 3-day weekend every week. So we did that. And also, I said, okay, I'll go along with Dr. Blatchford's suggestion that we work 180 days a year, and we take 6 weeks off. Now, one of my biggest problems was how I'm going to cover call when I take 6 weeks off. That's a lot of time off. So we reached the agreement with my staff that they would each get 6 weeks off. So that was huge for a lot of the people that had been getting 2 weeks off. And I would cover call 46 weeks a year, and they in turn each would cover call 1 week a year. So when I'm on vacation now, one of my staff persons calls in, checks in, and every three times a day. They don't have to sit in the office, but they call and check in three times a day, and they see if a patient needs help. And a lot of times it would be resubmitting a temporary. They can come in and do that. Or if it needs to be referred to a doctor on call, they can refer to the doctor on call. But this lets me take my 6 weeks off, lets them have their 6 weeks off, and I'm not burdened by trying to find somebody to switch call with me. So that's the big thing.
Tom, let me interrupt you for a little bit, and I want to ask you a question. What do you think, I mean, talking about team for a moment, what would you say created that shift in your team? They got excited at the Dynamo, but what did you do differently that created a shift in the team where they started looking for solutions?
Oh, boy, that's, it's just a whole dynamic with your coaching program. First of all, as I said, they start with a Dynamo, and I took my team to Chicago, and I kind of made it a treat for them. So we got picked up in the airport in a limo, which really doesn't cost much more than two cabs. So we got picked up, in fact, it's any more, in a limo. We played in Chicago for a day, and then we went to the Dynamo, and then we stayed an extra day, and we went and saw the sights of Chicago. So they were all enthusiastic and excited about that. Then we also began to have staff meetings every morning, and we began to have a longer meeting, an hour and a half meeting once a week. But we immediately agreed also to put in place a bunch of different programs and new systems.
What were the systems that you put in immediately that probably contributed to your increase in production? I mean, you were busy when you came here at 750. You were busy, and you're working the same amount of time and producing almost twice as much. What systems did your staff embrace so well that, and by helping them come up with solutions, pulled that together?
Well, probably the biggest thing is block booking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known about block booking for at least 20 years, but I didn't think that we could do it or pull it together. I think most of you on the call are familiar with block booking. What that is you take your productive work, crowns and bridges and whatever you do that produces high dollar volume, and you schedule those in the morning, and you schedule those, they're paced out so it's smooth, basically uninterrupted time, where you can see the patient, perform the treatment that they need, and they feel like they're getting your undivided personal attention, which they are and which they deserve, and it's just a nice, smooth, easy morning. So I do my production between 8 and 12:30, and then in the afternoons, we'll do things like deliver the posterior units, we'll do fillings or take care of any kind of emergencies or just things that patients call and they have a slight problem. So the productive work is done in the morning, and the non-productive or low productive work is done in the afternoon. So block booking is huge. I've known it and understood it. I tell you the truth, I did not believe we could do it. And it's a little bit scary at first when you say, okay, we're not going to schedule. We've got 2 days from now. We've got an hour and a half open, and we're not going to schedule that. And
in other words, you're not going to fill it with something lower than your goal.
Exactly. You hear or create the environment for great things to happen, and they do. Well, it's really true. There are other factors that go in there. The Blatchford bonus program is really very, very innovative, and that works better than I've been on. Had about 10 different bonus programs, and that one works better than any other program I've ever used. But block booking really makes a huge difference, and it's scary at first. And it's a little bit of a struggle, too, because the staff is not used to being real firm with the patients. And, Charlie Green calls and says, I've got to come in this morning to have this nebulous toothache taken care of. And it's the only time I can come. And you just have to get your staff trained to say, well, Charlie, we can see you after at 1:30.
Of course, that toothache has been hurting for 3 or 4 weeks at this point, so it's not exactly an emergency. Tom, tell us a little bit about your staff embracing the bonus system. I think that was a major turning point in your practice when I look back, is that once the staff understood there was something in it for them, they really started looking for solutions.
They really did. You know, like I said, I've had a bunch of different bonus systems in the past, and they would work at first, but they just really didn't work. The way that you explained the program, they were able to get it. So they sat down and put pencil to paper, and they realized what they had to do, how much they had to produce to earn a bonus. And fortunately, I had the right mix of staff and the right mix of patients that we got back. And the first 15 days, they got a $600 bonus, and we've actually never missed a bonus.
Yeah, I think Dr. Lopez and his team were recently at a seminar we did in Chicago, and they made the comment that they had not missed a bonus period since they started the program. Tom, tell us a little bit about what you've done. A couple of things that we did. Tom increased his production, and then later in the year, his friend across the street decided to retire, move up to the mountains, and Tom was called me one day and says, "What do you think I ought to do?" And of course, I never have answers. I asked him what he thought he ought to do, and he said, "Well, I think I ought to buy it." And so we talked about it a little bit. And he was able to buy it at a fair price to both parties, incorporate that practice into his. I think one of the team members, and it was a much smaller practice than his, but it really made a significant difference on the practice. Tell us a little bit about that. That was a part of the strategy as well.
Okay. Well, for the first 4 months, we just grew from within our practice. And like I said, my staff has never missed a bonus. And last year, they averaged about $700 a month for a bonus. But a friend of mine across the street was getting ready to retire. And he told me he'd like me to buy his practice because he wanted me to take care of his patients. And I called Bill and I asked him what he thought about it. I said it was really a great opportunity, but I just didn't know, being that I was going to turn 60 that year. And Bill said, "Well, you know, you're wanting to do a little more of the kind of work you want to do. You're starting to do some advertising." And he said, "That's the only advertising you'd ever need to do the rest of your practice." So that was really the deciding factor for me. And I also had listened to some of Bill's tapes in the past before I signed up for the program. I knew that he was an advocate of acquiring practices to increase the size of your practice. And it was just a perfect mesh because Dr. Stevens was a year older than me, and I also happened to know that he did a real high-quality work. But he also did a bunch of five-surface amalgams. So I knew there was a real gold mine over there, and that's I wasn't going to have to be retreating things, and there were going to be a lot of crowns that I'd be doing for his patients, and it's just worked out marvelously.
And Dr. Stevens comes in sometimes and does a little dentistry for you a day or week or so, doesn't he?
Yes.
After
about 6 months, he started getting bored. I called and asked if he could help me, so he comes in and does fillings, and that's been a little bit of a problem. It's a great problem to have, is that I don't have enough time to do fillings. So with the crown and bridge and other things I'm doing, mainly with crown and bridge, I can't get my filling patients scheduled.
One of the things, that's a problem that everybody would like to have. One of the things that we see is that right now, and for those of you who have listened to me or read my articles, I've been saying this for about 10 years, is that we're coming up on a time when it's going to become more difficult to sell practices because when most of you graduated from dental school, there were 6,500 graduates a year, 90% of which were male. Today, we're graduating just under 4,000 graduates. Roughly 40% are female, and a large percentage of the female graduate is not going into private practice. They're not buying offices. So we've cut the pool right there. And then the other thing, we've got roughly 2,000 buyers, or 3,000 buyers, rather, for about 6,000 retiring dentists. But the other problem that we have is the demographics have shifted dramatically. When most of us graduated from dental school, being at that time was 95% males, our spouses were not into careers. They were secretaries, nurses, teachers, hygienists, things like that, who could get a job anywhere. Today we have the male graduate who has a wife who is also a dentist or an engineer or an accountant or an attorney or a physician, and they need to go to larger metropolitan areas where they can have a career. Or we have the female graduate who has a husband who is an engineer, a dentist, a physician, an architect, an accountant, attorney, etc., and they need to go where they can get a career. So we're going to see a large number of practices, especially in outlying areas that are not going to be saleable, and some of these practices are wonderful, and they're not expensive to pick up, and all of those patients seen through new eyes find a lot of work to do. And even though Dr. Stevens was an excellent dentist, someone else sees that patient as a new patient. You always want to remember that all of your new patients did leave another dentist. It's amazing how much work we do on new patients that have been seeing someone else. So that has worked out really well. Tell us a little bit about your schedule. You work 4 days a week. You take 6 weeks off. I know you and your wife travel quite a bit. I know last year you went to Egypt in January. You're doing quite a bit of traveling. How do you space that 6 weeks off, Tom? How do you do that?
What we do is we have a staff meeting at the beginning of the year, and since, you know, I pick the times that I want, and often we always take a week off at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And last year, since I've been in the Blanford program, two Christmases, one Christmas I went to Egypt for 2 weeks, and last year I spent Christmas and New Year's in the Amazon and in Peru at Machu Picchu. And in the summer, let's say I turned 60, so I celebrated that by going to the Galapagos Islands. So I'll probably have the main say on a couple of the extra weeks. Where everybody gets Christmas, and usually I'll combine a week with that and take 2 weeks there. That's an opportunity for a long trip. And then I let the office kind of determine the other 3 weeks.
Okay. So you've got some flexibility there for the staff as well.
Well, I think it's fair, and everybody's happy that way.
Yes, yeah, it's something I recommend.
You know, one thing about the staff that I forgot to say, Dr. Blatchford, they talk about having no accounts receivable. And when we were at the Dynamo, my staff, not me, my staff made a goal to eliminate accounts receivable and to get a positive cash balance. And I have to admit, I was concerned about a lot of things, you know, leadership and working with a lot of things, but we're humming along, and we've also, in a matter of months, we increased our production, so we're going to make an extra $500,000. And my overhead went from 65% to 55%. I'm pretty happy. Plus, we've got a bunch of new patients. I'm also pretty darn busy.
How did the accounts receivable, what's happened there?
December 1st, 1 year and probably about 20 days after we went to Dynamo, we had a little staff meeting at the end of the day, and my staff told me, we not only have no accounts receivable, we have $5,000 on the books.
Credit balance.
That we owe patients $5,000 worth of treatment.
Uh-huh.
That paid for and we haven't done.
Tom, tell us a little bit about your financial policy. Care Credit has to be one of my sponsors. I know you use Care Credit. Tell me what your financial policy is and how have you accomplished that, no receivables, and what's that done for you?
Well, it's really incredible. I have to take my hat off to my staff because they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And we said we were going to do it, and we said, well, what we had done in the past is we took assignment of insurance benefits, and we had the patients pay their part. And at a Dynamo, your explanation about receivables and how much it cost the office and how things really work, they got it.
Yes.
So they came back, and we said within 6 months we're going to give people notice, let them know, because we always made them pay for their part, but we did take assignment insurance benefits. So we started telling them, next time you're going to pay for your cleaning when you come in. Next time you're going to pay for, you know, they were very subtle and sophisticated about it. But we gave the patient 6 months lead time to know that the next time they came in that they were going to, we were going to expect payment in full, and the insurance company would reimburse them. Also, when we acquired Dr. Stevens' patients, we just made the change immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were new to them, and they weren't used to us taking assignment of benefits, so we just asked them to pay right up front. And he had a very, very, very lax collection policy.
Tom, a lot of doctors are afraid to do that. They're afraid they'll lose patients. Did you lose some patients with that?
I'm sure I did,
mm-hmm.
But you know, when you patients pay in advance, they'll miss their appointments.
Yes.
So
it changes some of the atmosphere in the office, doesn't it, to have people, they've already paid, they appreciate your work, and the thing that I see is that people that owe you money generally don't refer to you.
That's true. And they also like their treatment a lot better.
Yes.
When it's paid for, you get a whole lot fewer complaints. So you don't have the nitpicking that you're liable to get when they owe you $1,000 or so, or $5,000, whatever. You know, we try not to get big amounts on the books, but when they owe you money, they come in and nitpick you.
Yes. And you mentioned earlier that you changed the way you present treatment to patients, because one of the things that happened in your practice is you raised your production immediately. This is before you bought Dr. Stevens' practice, so that was a factor, but it wasn't a major factor. Tell us a little bit about the shift in the way you present treatment today versus what you've been doing for years.
Well, Dr. Blackford, this is where he's different from anybody else that I've ever heard. And I've taken Walter Haley, and I took my group to Quest years ago. Some of you may have heard of that. That was, and they all helped me. The one thing that's true, and it took me a while to get it, and it's still hard for me to do it, is people make decisions emotionally, instantly, and irreversibly, and they make them on the right side of their brain. And I'm really an analytical left-brain guy, so it was kind of hard for me to get that point. It actually, it really got driven home when I was in Bill's house, and Sandy and I are sitting on the couch opposite Bill and Carolyn, and we did some role-playing, and that's when I really got it. And so that's the first thing.
Tom struggled a little bit with that. He said a little bit, and I remember one time he called, and of course we do a monthly call with each of my clients one-on-one, and he said, boy, I'm really struggling with this right brain stuff. He says, my staff is really good at it, but I'm struggling. But, you know, as dentists are so analytical and so left-brain and provide these information dumps to patients thinking that we're selling dentistry by educating. And, of course, this is a huge paradigm shift. And Tom is a – and I think the more the doctor is in the clinical side of the dentistry, the more difficult it is. But he's been able to pull it off, and sometimes he has to back off and let his staff take over and sell the treatment. So it's been tough. But go ahead, Tom. Tell us a little bit about the shift that you made with your team. Your team made quite a shift in this area, too.
My team made quite a shift. But, I mean, I've always known that I was not exactly warm and fuzzy, so I've tried to hire outgoing and really personable people, and I've done that for my whole practice. You know, the one thing about Blackford presentation technique that's totally different is after you find out what the people want, you see if you can ethically and morally give them what they want, and then you've got somebody you can work with. But the first thing you do is you don't tell them what they need, you find out what they want. And you really do it quite quickly. And then after you find out what they want, on the first visit, when they're there, you give them a ballpark estimate. Say, well, this is the kind of treatment you want. It's, for example, if they want 10 veneers, say your treatment's probably going to run about $15,000. And
how hard was that the first few times you did, Tom?
Well, actually, you know, I read the books and the bibliography, and I talked to you, and I said, if it works on me, it's got to work. So, because I was very skeptical. So I think the first time I did it, the patient said, that's about what I expected.
That was a plant. We planted that patient in your practice. We send her around to new clients to make sure that it works the first time you try it.
So my jaw probably hit my chest. So I've really begun to do that. And what that does, it takes all the pressure off. And if you look at it, Bill talks about buying a house, but I look at it, you know, I'm thinking like here we have a European car dealer, and they sell Mercedes, BMWs, and Volkswagens, and somebody's coming in there, and if they ask the salesman, you know, what's the cost for the Mercedes convertible, and it's $100,000, when the salesman tells them the price, they aren't offended. And then they say, well, how about that Beamer at $60,000? How about the Volkswagen? But after you've got them to tell you what they want, and you tell them what the fee is right up front, the first visit, you haven't gone through a whole lot of effort and work, they'll say, well, about what I thought, or, you know, I couldn't afford that. In which case, you just back off and say, well, that's fine, you know, we'll do what we can to help you keep your teeth and help you meet, you know, whatever you want to do, help you do what we can to help you keep your teeth and take care of the kind of treatment you want.
Tom, one of the things that I'd like you to talk about is some of the questions perhaps that your staff ask, and then, you know, there's sometimes a rumor gets going that using my method we don't really believe in a complete examination, and where do you fit in your complete examination? How do you do that? Because you're very clinically oriented, and like you said, you like to get right down to the the nuts and bolts of treatment. So tell us a little bit about the sequence and how you got over this idea of asking questions, find out what you want, ballpark, and then when they say yes, then you do your exam. How do you do that?
Okay, well, what we do, first of all, is everything is geared towards high anesthetic cases, and I don't want to do that every day. I want to do that a couple of times a week. My bread and butter is posterior treatment. Posterior molar crown. I make more per dollar per hour doing those. But
So yours is not, you wouldn't classify it as a cosmetic practice. It's a general practice emphasizing restorative dentistry, and you do some aesthetics on top of that.
Well, yeah, I do. A lot of my new patients are coming in for aesthetics now, so I'm doing more and more and more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we've got photographs in the office of patients we've treated. On the walls in the waiting room, and we also have a nice website, and I invite any of you to look at the website if you'd like to. It's smiletallahassee.com. But when the patient comes in and they tell us that they want, they're excited, the staff gets them fired up. So they're already fired up.
Tell me what the staff does. That's what I want to hear.
Well, the staff is going to find out what they're here for. So if they're here for if they're here for a makeover, or they want a smile makeover, even a second opinion, they'll brag about me a little bit, and they'll also refer them to our webpage on the telephone before they come in. So we have a lot of patients look at our webpage, and a lot of them don't.
So it actually starts on the telephone with the staff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we also get a lot of referrals from other patients we've treated, and some from other doctors, too. So they come in, and they've already decided they want to do the treatment, and they just really... they want to know if you're the one that's going to do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the staff brings them back and talks with them, helps them with a health questionnaire, finds out what they want, and then they'll come in, they'll introduce me. And when the staff does their job, the patient's already smiling, relaxed, and happy when I come in there. So I can tell if they're pretty much already sold.
Does your staff ever talk to them before you come in about what it might cost?
It depends upon if they can find out from the patient what the patient may have beginning a second opinion and say they want 10 veneers. Some people actually call and say that, and we'll say, well, it could cost you $15,000 for that.
So they do that then. They get the money out of the way, sometimes on the telephone, and sometimes in the initial interview before they meet you. So by the time you show up, and if they're still there, if they're in the chair and they already know it's $15,000, you don't have to do a whole lot except figure out whether you can do it or not.
Absolutely, because that exam time is really, you aren't making any money on that exam. It's just, meet and greet, and financially, that's, it's non-productive time. So you waste your time and energy. Also, the biggest thing that made a difference for me using your presentation techniques is I don't feel rejected anymore.
Yeah.
So right up front, we say, tell them they tell us what they want. We say we can do it and give them a ballpark figure, and they say yay or nay. So I don't go working up these huge treatment plans and keeping it a secret like as a lot of people do. They say, well, tell them if this is the kind of treatment, if money was no option, tell them up front what the money is, and then if they're interested, work up the treatment plan. But what I actually do then, if they're excited and they're ready to go, before I do the treatment, any anterior aesthetic case, now different people have different philosophies, but I'm going to take a series of photographs, study models, do a face film out, and I'm going to have the teeth that we're going to change waxed up.
Mm-hmm.
So when they commit to that, they're going to probably have, I charge $50 per tooth to get it waxed up, plus the study model and the photos. So they're going to have, if they say, this is the treatment I want to do and I'm ready to go, and I can afford that, we'll sign them up with care credit or what. However, I don't do that. The ladies do that, and we'll have they may commit on that first visit to have the study models and the wax stuff done. So they've committed to $400 to $1,000 for their to get ready for their treatment. So really, they've already made up their mind. I'm going to use the wax-ups and the models and the photos to restore the case, but when they commit to $400 or $1,000, probably more like $600 usually.
But you're not spending a couple hours doing a complete examination, working up a treatment plan, writing it up for them in advance, and then at the last moment telling them how much, and then they...
No, I tell them in advance.
Yeah.
And, I tell them in advance, and that first visit, we may go ahead and get the models and the photographs, because when they're hot and excited about this, and it's an emotional elective treatment, we'll get them started.
And I'm going to open this up. I'm going to ask some of the doctors to ask some questions. Steve, you're from Boston. Do you have any questions for Tom, how he puts this stuff in place in his office?
Yeah, I did. You still have your original staff, or did you have to change over?
I do have my original staff, and I was surprised. I didn't know if they were going to go along with me. And I've had some people, one person had been with me 25 years, the other 20, and two that had been with me 8 years. And I didn't know if they were going to make the change, but they did.
Yeah, the more I listen, the more I read, you know, you figure out your own shortcomings, and I think leadership is mine. I let the staff make a lot of decisions in my office, which I see as a mistake.
Well, it depends on the decisions, if I could answer that. It depends
sure.
on the decisions. I think what works in any practice, any business, country, whatever, leadership makes the big decisions in direction, where we're going, and yet the implementation is very often left to the team, and I think that's true anywhere. The more empowered people are, the more they will be on board, and if they're all, I think it's wonderful that they make a lot of the decisions. As a matter of fact, my monthly call this month, which I have for team members, and I have one for the doctors as well, is on making decisions, and one of my philosophies is, of course, to allow the team members to make decisions, but they have to be in they have to be congruent with the direction the leader has said this business is going. If it's not congruent with that, well, then we got a problem. I think the big picture, and I think what Tom was able to do, is he set the direction for the practice, and it was fun to watch his team, and part of the reason we chose Tom to be on this call was his team really embraced what he said he wanted to do, and once they've done that, now they can make decisions knowing that that decision is probably the same as Tom would make. Now, once in a while, obviously, they'll make a decision that's not what he would make, and then what we have to do is say, well, given the facts that you had, we always know that you made the best decision at the time. We might want to look at it this way the next time. So,
a big help on that, too, was Bill, Carolyn, and Nancy Granahan, because sometimes, especially my staff calls Nancy Granahan, who was my personal coach there, fairly often when they have, we did have some conflicts, certainly. So, but they did help me a lot in.
Nancy is our coach that works with the team members in Tom's office. And
because a lot of times I'll make a decision and it's already made and it's trying to convince them. And I've recently been trying to get them to go along with the decision or reach the same decision on their own. So that's been last year.
That will prove to be more effective. One of the things that we really work on is, we do work on the leadership, Steve, and that is that's the direction. That's the view from 35,000 feet. As far as implementation goes, I would like to have my clients, like Tom, be able to back off, let the team get more involved, make some of those decisions. One of the things that we have discovered, for example, if Tom had gone to them and said, look, we're going to go from 750,000 to 1.2 million, they looked at him like said, you and whose army? But when it was their goal, when it was their idea to do 1.2, wow, they made it happen. And had he come to them and said, we're going to cut out Friday mornings, they would have probably revolted, especially if they were being paid by the hour, but they came up with the idea, and of course with the bonus system, they get paid the same whether you work Friday mornings or not work Friday mornings. It doesn't make any difference. They get their 20%, and it's their idea now to get it done in less time. It's the same way with taking on this additional patient load. They were fully enrolled in that idea that, yes, we can do it, and that partially is the leadership style that Tom has adopted, is letting the staff be involved in these decisions. You can imagine going to a team that's doing a million and say, we're going to take on, came from 750 to a million, and then so we're going to add this other practice now, and no, we're not going to hire additional people. You can imagine the revolt you might have on your hands. So a lot of these decisions, you have to have the staff involved, absolutely. Does that answer that, Steve?
Yeah, it did. I have one more, if I may.
Yeah.
Tom, you said you flew out to Oregon. It's Oregon, Bill, or Washington?
Yeah, Oregon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have a clear vision of where you wanted to go at that time, or did you, are you formulating that as you go along, or did you formulate it as you were sitting down with Bill and Carolyn?
My vision has changed. It's been an amazing adventure for 18 months, and I'm not exaggerating. As Bill said at the beginning, my goal was just to do more of the high-end work that I enjoy doing a couple of times a week and to take more time off. And that was my only goal, and to not make less money. So that was my goal, and when we got to Chicago, my staff came up with a goal that they wanted to do $1.4 million. That was their goal. And Bill's coaching said, well, let's take 6 weeks off, and I wanted to do that anyhow, and we could work it out so the staff could take the same amount of time off, I could have the office covered. That was something that was uncovered at the meeting. And to have zero accounts receivable is something I would have thought totally impossible. And block booking has just made it possible to work smarter and easier. So some
Tom's good friend, dental school classmate, is Paul DiCarlo, who's also in the book. And they probably sat next to each other in dental school. But Paul is on my Retire As You Go program as well, same age. And again, doesn't really need to work, but loves dentistry, wants to do more of the type of treatment he's been trained to do for the last 30 years. And he works in Fort Myers, Florida, and he does, in the summertime, he works 3 days a week, and he and his wife have a home up in South Carolina in the mountains. South or North Carolina, Tom?
North Carolina.
North Carolina in the mountains. And he spends 4 days a week up there, roughly. I mean, the schedule changes, but... But that's what Tom came to us with, was I want to be basically the Retire As You Go program. I love dentistry. I've got enough money. I don't really need to make more money. I just want to have more fun. I want to do more of the kind of cases I want. And so the vision evolved as we sat and talked. And Tom is always one, like many dentists, who's always up for a challenge. And for part of it, part of the vision is not to just let this thing dwindle down to nothing, as some dentists do. I talk to dentists who are older and still practicing, but they're not happy. They're not having a fun time because they remember when the practice was really fun, but it's not now because they haven't continued to grow. And I don't mean grow in just dollars or volume. It's just the growth process has stopped, and they're just biding their time until retirement. And they're not happy campers. So that was part of the vision that evolved.
Oh, I can add two other points. One, before I signed up, I called Paul DiCarlo, and he said, Bill Blatchford's the only consultant I've ever talked to that did what he said. He made me happy and made my staff happy. So that was the first thing. And the second thing is, when we went out and talked with Bill and Carolyn, they custom designed my goals and my desires and helped me plan what I wanted. So they don't put you in a box. It's not one size fits all. They design a program that's appropriate for you and for your desires. So I'm really happy with that.
Well, I think that's important for everybody. Is regardless of where you are in practice, everybody has different goals, different wants, and anybody it tries to put everybody in the same box. I mean, it just doesn't work. It's got to be individual. And since it's the same for the team, you've got to have team members that want the same thing that you want, and if they don't, you know, they probably need to find a different office to work in. Paul DiCarlo is another one that's had one of the things in the chapter in the book. He mentions that he has the same team today that he had when he bought the practice 30-some years ago. They've all stayed with him the entire time, including through the 2 years he spent with us in a coaching program. So if the team is the right team, they stay. If they're wrong ones, they go. Who else has any questions for Tom?
Tom, John C. Schultz, Tallahassee, Florida here. Tom's a friend of mine here in Tallahassee. And can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're the prosthodontist?
I am.
Yes.
Now,
welcome to the call.
If you were to go to the $2 million mark, let's say, and your staff is thinking $1.4 million, how would you devise that kind of thing?
The staff is not going to have a problem with it because of the way the bonus program works. So the way I would devise that is, first of all, we've been so busy the last year, just making changes and acquiring a new practice, that I haven't really implemented all of the presentation and role-playing, and we are not as good at presenting cases as we are going to be next week and six months from now.
So you're still growing on it. John, the answer is that we have practices. We had a couple practices last year that broke $3 million. And these are small teams. One of them has four team members. That's in Boulder, Colorado. She's actually in the book. Lori Kemet is in the book. Her number's in the book. We're at 2.4 the year we wrote the book. Last year she did $3 million. We have another one out in Seattle. We're recently at a seminar in Chicago. And the team is really involved in that. I can tell you about both of those, but the team in Chicago was they're from Seattle. They were recently in a seminar in Chicago. The bonus system works in that office. Last year, each team member received a $30,000 apiece bonus. They're averaging $2,500 a month of bonus money. And believe me, when that team stood up in the seminar and introduced themselves, bragging about their doctor, the whole room took notice.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens in that practice in her office, is the patients take notice because they are so much part of the team. It is amazing, and they're in Bellevue, Washington, which is an affluent part of Seattle. However, there's a dentist on every corner, and this team blew right past the $2 million mark and went to $3 million. So, I don't know if that answers your question, but they're really excited about it because there's more in it for them.
It does,
and they don't want more team members because the more team members they have, it's the same amount of money, and you can divide it by a small number or a large number. And the team figures out how to do it.
Could I ask one more question?
Yes.
The blocked booking, is that going to cut out a lot of patients? If you hadn't purchased the other practice, would you have lost a lot of patients there?
No. And you just work smoother and more efficiently. And if you have a hole in your schedule at 3 o'clock the day before, then you'll go ahead and schedule something that's not as productive. I would call one of my filling patients and say, move somebody up. But the staff is really efficient at filling those blocks, and especially after they get a taste of the bonuses, they don't want to have non-productive time in the morning. And also, they see that if they do slip something in there they shouldn't, I get upset and frustrated, and they don't like to be frustrated.
One of the things last night, Dr. Okamura answered that question, and she said it's really a matter of the entire team's presenting the value of what we're doing, and the benefit to the patients is what has to be. You always have to come from the position of the patient's benefit. What's in it for the patient? And the block booking allows that patient to have uninterrupted time with the doctor. And that's something that we have discovered that patients absolutely want and are willing to pay a premium for if they get it. And in most offices where the doctor is running from room to room, they may be paying the premium fee, but they're not getting that premium service. And that's one of the things that we have found really encourages patient referrals. In many offices, the patient goes in and the place is so busy, nobody's going to refer to you because they're afraid if they have to wait now and then they refer their friend, they'll have to wait that much longer. So they don't refer. They assume we're so busy. So we've found that the patients actually like the block booking better than.
Oh, okay.
Especially if you present it as a benefit to them. You know, And as Tom mentioned earlier, they very seldom have a cancellation now. Number one is one reason is they've already paid, and secondly, the patients start to understand that when Tom books 2 hours for them in a morning, and they've experienced 2 hours with the doctor with no interruptions, that if they're not there, Tom's sitting there twiddling his thumbs, and they appreciate that and they show up. So
that's true.
Question is, can you please everybody? No. You're going to lose patients whether you use block scheduling or not use block scheduling. You're going to lose some patients whether you collect money in advance or don't collect money in advance. People move. People, for whatever reasons, change dentists. And so you'll always lose a few. There's always a flux going on. What other questions you have for Tom? Anybody?
Tom, what made you decide to hire Bill? Why did you think you couldn't make these changes on your own?
Well, first of all, as I had been reading sales books, and I'm constantly reading and bringing ideas into the office, and it's I always met with resistance. So it's not that I didn't have ideas and I wasn't constantly bringing ideas into the office. I didn't take a lot of continuing ed, but getting the staff to implement the continuing ed and the ideas I was bringing in was very, very difficult. And as Bill said at the beginning, I was in a position where I could retire, and my philosophy is either you're growing or you're dying. And I did not want to let my practice dwindle down and I wanted to continue to grow, and I'd started writing some articles and doing some lecturing, and I still love dentistry, and I just wanted to do it, not work harder. I wanted to work smarter, and probably two things. When I called Paul DiCarlo, and he said, how successful he had been, and that he was happy, and his staff was happy. And then I took my staff over to Jacksonville for a preview, and they got all excited, so I said, okay, we'll sign up and we'll go on board. So Dr. Blatchford, and is that Nancy asked me the question?
That was Carol.
Carol?
Yes.
Thank
you.
They were able to create a team, and we're all pulling in the same direction, and I'm no longer pulling the wagon with them riding and sometimes even dragging their feet. Mm-hmm. Does that answer it?
Yes, thank you.
So it's not information, it's implementation of it. And one of the things that I like to do is make the distinction between coaching and consulting. And consulting is fixing problems, and coaching is, number one, helping people see their direction, not giving them the direction, but helping them find their own direction, their own vision. And two is the accountability of doing things. And there were times where Tom would call and say, now, is this going to work? And I think just being there to encourage him when the block booking scared him to death. I mean, that really scared him. He knew that holding those blocks open in the morning, his production was going to go down. Patients were going to leave because they didn't want to come at certain times of the day. That was one where staff and I conspired a little bit, but to keep him going in that direction, and that's because he said he wanted that. He wanted less hectic days. He didn't want to be so rushed and that sort of thing. And so had he asked me for hectic days, I wouldn't have held his feet to the fire on the block booking. But he said, I want to slow the pace down a little bit and get more done. Anybody else?
I do have one more thing to say about that, too, is you get a personal coaching call and a team coaching call, and you also have a group of all the doctors. So that 2 hours of talking to Bill, listening to other doctors a month, really keeps you motivated. And the 1 hour with the staff calling and hearing other staff members with similar problems and situations is also very motivational and keeps people going.
We've had fun with some of the staff that get off those calls, and they come back and say, hey, we can do this. I heard somebody in Detroit, Michigan just go from $160,000 in receivables to a credit balance in a year's time while their production went up. And it was amazing how many staff, after that call, came back and started collecting money. Well, I want to thank Michael. I didn't give you a chance to say anything. Michael from Rocket Dog is on the call. Rocket Dog Marketing, they're one of our sponsors in Seattle. Any comments, Michael, that you want to add?
You know, I think Tom is definitely going down the right road with what he's talking about. One of the things that, you know, he's saying with regards to his marketing and having the staff buy into it, and then also the people coming into his door, they understand when they come in, based on his marketing, what that experience should be. And that's part of the key, is you have to create that brand, and you got to let people know about you, because if they don't know about you, they're never going to come.
And you can't be an invisible dentist.
Yeah, and so you got to create that quality brand that lives and stands behind the quality work and service that you're going to deliver for clients.
Well, I want to thank everybody. If any of you are on the call, doctors are considering doing our program, I'd like you to welcome Peter, Carol, David, Robert, whoever you're working with or would work with. They will contact your office, let them know that you're maybe getting a call, and at least take the call. And if you're interested in what we do, great. If you're not, I appreciate you being on the call this morning. Again, I appreciate you buying the book. And if you have any friends that you think might benefit from that book, buy a copy for them. The proceeds are all going to some great causes. And I thank all of you for taking your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tom, thank you very much. You did a great job.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, everyone.